of a northern Wisconsin town. Sun beats down, wind goes away, and the muskies have gone down. Main stage is at 13 feet, soft plastics, deep divers, panoptics have been switched on. Whoa! Baby, these lures rip the bones from your back, it's a throwback. It's a suicide rap, we gotta get out while we're young. Cause bulls like us, baby, we were born blind.
Alright folks, welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast, Jaybird.
Steven!
Are you fired up? We're almost 13 days out from the Musky Shop Bash.
Closing in on it quickly.
Closing
can't wait.
Closing in. We're getting
closing
there.
Time. Yeah. Okay. We are. There.
You got.
Yep. We're getting.
I'm looking
ready.
At the website right now, folks. Food, fun, musky gear, and dozens of vendors.
Free goods, discounts.
What do you know? It's gonna be cool. If you're in the area, make it up. I know there's some podcasters that are coming up. Get your can of Northwoods Musky Hog Sauce. We have so much to cover this week.
Yeah.
There's so many guys out on the water, so many people with questions. We're going to get to it. Last week turned into not what I planned.
Right.
It turned into.
It segued.
It segued into ranting and Herbeckisms. And it was fun.
Yeah, that God was good. Bless that was a good
one. I enjoyed that. It was interesting. Heard back from some people this week about that. You know, these pressured areas, they're seeing it, you know, do with it what thine will. So, anyway, the comings and the goings at the Musky Shop. You got the Spanky Bait Big Angry. That is, what my wife had the Big Angry one time, Jay. You know.
Stay clear of that.
Yeah, sleep in your yard and see who gets the Big Angry, you know. Oh.
Sleeping in the low.
There he is. I just, you know, you do something dumb. Guess what, Jay? Big angry. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, this is a bait. This is a bait, well, actually. I'm reading it. It's says, a bucktail bone from Spanky Bait.
It says, yeah. It's incredibly simple. Simply incredible. What's going on? Hey, Blake, what's going on? Tell me now. Fast. We got so many questions this week, Jay. What's going on?
That is a large frame bucktail with double 10 blades, but they're combo blades. One's an Indiana and one's a Mag 10. And then they also came out with a junior version, if you can call it that, of the Whiplash Spinnerbait, which is gigantic. Yeah. So this one, the junior is big too, but if you want the biggest frame spinnerbaits on the market, Spanky Baits, Whiplash, and Whiplash Junior. Yeah. It's a hog.
That is. I'll tell you, people, well, why do you need a 7-ounce spinnerbait? I don't know if that's their intent. Does it say it in the description about trolling? But this is an amazing casting bait and perfect for trolling. Yes, you can cast it and work deep edges. If you watch the Musky Shop TV, the little video here about spinnerbaits that came out, thank you for all the
big video.
Out. Yeah. Something like this, fishing deep ledges and edges, you can rip it, you can do anything you want with a bait of that size, but I immediately think really great for your spinnerbait trolling, because the heavier your spinnerbait is, the less line you need out, which is going to equal better hookups, you know what I'm saying?
True.
Speaking of spinnerbaits, sold out on the meat grinder, sold out on tailgaters. Dawn will have them. I think they'll get there tomorrow, day after. There's some people signed up for that. So more tailgaters, more meat grinders are coming. Something that did land. You got your fat bastards. You got your little bastards.
Yeah, you got a bunch more of those in.
Fat and little available now in both sizes.
And some others. Yeah.
And some others. Do we have the cannonballs or did it what's cooking there?
Cannonball Juniors? Yeah. No, we got some more doctor. Oh, we have some. You know,
we have some.
But we got more coming in. Yep.
But
we got them.
The two most popular sizes: the little B, the fat B. You got your ducky collars. There's cute little duck collars. There's toxic looking frog collars. There's things that aren't real collars, which are all good. Any color. I think they're all in. I'm looking here. I'm saying dumb stuff because I'm sort of going to the color. It looks like silver. Pretty much restock on everything there, because we are definitely getting into fat B, little B. You know, I like the Little Bastard as a follow up. And if you're on like not big fish water, that's great. Question that a lot of people have asked, especially fishing with me and everything. Could you use a Whopper Plopper? You could, but I love the Little Bastards. Bigger profile, better hooks, and they hold up. You know, so if you're dialed in on pike or small muskies on small topwaters, Little Bastards worth looking at from a durability standpoint.
Yeah, it's truly a surface bait that's made for muskies. Yeah,
and we sell Whopper Plopper. Don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking it, but from a durability standpoint, it's like, okay, this is way better than I've caught big muskies on the small size Whopper Ploppers and stuff. We're like, okay, well, it's now going in the trash. You know, take the hooks off and save it. I don't know how often they show up. Worth noting here for your trollers, Jay. This request goes out to all the trollers. You got the Legend Perch Cranks are back in.
Yeah.
If you know, it's one of Jay with these baits. If you know, you know.
It's exactly well put.
If you know, you know. If you don't, don't ask. Yep.
There's a group of people that absolutely love those things.
Don't worry about it. Don't even ask. But if you know, Jay, you know.
Super deep diving, super durable, super tough, even the finish, and they work. I mean, Herbeck told me about trolling that thing. He's like, I put 10 miles on this thing, and he's like, there's not a scratch on the finish, and I caught fish on it too.
Yeah,
he was an advocate for those. That's way back when.
Yeah, those have been a staple in the Herbeck trolling arsenal. And speaking of Herbecks, the other Herbeck, Danny, talked to him earlier today. Got some of his Savage Gear 3D Burbot. That's his, he's kind of the mastermind behind that thing. Those are back in. Interesting topwater. Evergreen Combat Rat, Jay. That's what I'm dressing for Halloween. Forget being a Ninja Turtle. I'm going to be a Combat Rat.
Which color?
Big Bite Short.
Well, of course. Man, I'm glad you didn't say Olive Gold Flash, because that's what Tom Rudess is dressed as this Halloween. Listen,
if we all four of us dress up as the Combat Rats, it's like a bad, imagine just a show, you're sitting around in the 80s, Jay.
You can walk around with your spare tail, too.
Now, listen, though. It's the 80s. Why are all these kids into them Ninja Turtles? We need something. Knock it off. Rip it off quickly. I have an idea, sir. Combat Rats.
Sure.
There you go. That's how you get crappy kids' TV show, Jace.
Right. They're mean. Yeah. They get in fights and they catch fish.
They also live in the sewer. So Combat Rats.
They get down and dirty.
They get down and dirty. Can you sing the Combat Rats theme song, Jay?
No. Can you?
Teenage, middle-aged combat rats.
Pretty good. I like that.
Yeah, maybe we'll work on. Maybe that should be the intro next week. The intro to a combat rat TV show. Sorry. Combat rat.
Do you know they offer not just durability, but also a unique squeaking sound that mimics natural prey movements in the water?
Does that say that?
It does. We'll have to get that bad boy on the water this week.
Get yourself a combat rat, folks.
Pretty cool.
Get yourself a rat. Do we got the Stars and Stripes in?
No, we got a few coming in Monday or Tuesday.
Speaking about rats, Jay, open up eBay. Believe it or not, last night the wife and I took a quick siesta down to the coast. Flew down to the Gulf, did a little hanging out, flew back just to avoid the craziness of 4th of July and all that stuff. Basically, our dogs go nuts, so we just paid a dog sitter that had to put up with that crap for 2 days, and we didn't. You know, fair enough. So anyway, down there, and I was bored. We're sitting at a place that sold Pepsis, right? I'm pretty much in the zone, Jay. I'm in the zone. I'm relaxed, and I like to peruse the eBay looking at stuff. Let's look what musky baits are on here today, right? I'm always looking as there's weirder esoteric things, right? Never hardly going to look. People scalping the Stars and Stripes already, Jay.
No.
Yes.
Trying to get top dollar for it?
Freaking double. We'll get more. Don't pay the scalpers. Get your... What?
Black market booger.
Black market booger. Watch the combat rats fight black market booger. Anyway, Jay, I'm proud of you for being the leader of the combat rats. What's your special skill?
You're making fun of it. You wait until I put that thing to test. Catch a hog on it.
Listen, I'm not saying the bait's bad. I'm just saying I want an entire intro song based on the combat rats.
It's the combat rat.
This is not a 60s.
Something like that.
No, that's like 60s.
This is swing.
This is like, I'll tell you the greatest thing ever. I knew that I was like the next level of boomer. You know, you start getting a little bit older here. When Mike Patton from Faith No More redid the Ninja Turtles theme song. I don't know if you've heard it. It's epic.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, we'll come up with combat rats. Maybe we can do it next week. Believe it or not, next week, folks, it happens fast around here. We'll be broadcasting live from Jay's torture dungeon. I believe.
Oh man, I think you're right. That's hard to believe.
So we're there. See you guys. Get your plans lined up for the bash. Watch out for combat rats. Check under your bed. Check your back seat before you start your car. Here we go, Jay. Are you ready?
Sheer.
Gentlemen, start your combat rats. Josh! And I'll try to get to everybody's guts. Sorry. We'll get to all the questions here as quickly as possible. We're going to blare through them as best of our ability. If we didn't cover your question, resend it. I don't want to look back that far. Josh! We want a segment called Herbeck Tells How He Really Feels, or Herbeck's Rant of the Week. Thanks for answering the rookie quit.
Okay. Herbeck's rant of the week. That is great.
Hold on. Oh, bear with me, Jay.
That is funny.
It's coming. Hold on.
Okay.
Don't go anywhere.
Okay.
Don't go anywhere.
Okay.
Now you know what I'm doing.
Now you're going to put me on hold.
I'm going to put you on hold.
Beep, boop, 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 beep, beep, beep.
60. Yeah.
Hey, listen to me. I'm sitting here answering questions. On the podcast, right?
Yeah.
And the guy says, we want a segment called Herbeck's Rant of the Week. What are you mad about right now, Steve Herbeck, in under 5 minutes? What's got you fired up?
Well, am I alive?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
He said we want a segment called Tell Us How Herbeck Really Feels, or Steve Herbeck's Rant of the Week. So it's not your chance. What's going on? Give him hell.
Well, you got. I actually just pulled into Andy Myers' lodge for 8 weeks. Had a couple of rum and cokes in me. Uh-huh. See, you saying hi to everybody. So I don't know if I'm really in the mood to rant tonight, but I'll tell you what. I'll have some ready to go the next time.
Absolutely. All right, guys. I'll give it you soon, Steve. You're such a good sport. I'm sure by the time he's got a week up there, he's going to be ready to rock on something. We'll give it you soon, all right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I made it across the border, and they damn near had coffee or cookies and milk for me, which I can't rant about. That's the nicest I've been treated in a long time.
Well, of anybody that doesn't deserve to be treated nice, it's you.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well, you have a good evening. We'll get at you soon, okay?
All right.
Jay?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Hold on. I got him there. I'm going to have to cut and edit that a smidge because I got him. And he was like, I'm in such a great mood. So he's like, he had a couple rum and cokes. So no rant, guys. I apologize. But I like the sentiment. We will get a rant out of him here in the future. That was probably the calmest, Jay. I didn't even punch you in. I didn't even hear him pick up. So that was the calmest I've heard Steve Herbeck. So we'll see. He'll get fired up.
Okay. Yeah.
He was kind of in a zen state, so we'll get him next week. But anyway, that's great. Herbeck's rant of the week. Just man screaming. And the bike came up. We'll get it, guys. Just have faith. We'll get it. Anyway, guy says I've started to figure out how to catch a lot of fish on my local water that is super pressured. I can catch a lot of 32 to 40 inch fish, but only two over 40 so far. if all these fish are caught roughly in the same kind of places on the lake, first break outside Weedish, what should I do besides night fishing and keep casting to find bigger fish? Sorry if it doesn't make sense. No, it makes total sense. That you end up in a slot size class a lot of times on highly pressured water. First question I would ask Josh is, are other people catching fish that exceed, you know, if you only got 2 over 40, are you seeing other results or hearing about other catches, or is the lake so pressured that we're not getting a lot of muskies that are making it past 45 or 44? Because, I mean, it's just a cruel fact of things. The more a fish is caught, the more susceptible it is to mortality based upon adverse hooking or handling, right?
Yeah, right.
I'm not here to preach, whatever. Don't care. That it's just a truism, right? If we never fish for them, we would never kill them. But if we fish for them, there is a moderate risk, and we should try to minimize that, blah, 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 blah. Do your best. But you can have so much pressure that a fishery is really not turning out consistently anything bigger than X, Y, and Z because they're just not getting the opportunity to grow that to anything bigger, or they're so susceptible to pressure or whatever. So that's something to consider. You always have like a big fish in a system, one or two, but look at it from the perspective of, is there any consistency to this? So I say that because don't beat your head off the wall in a lake that won't produce 50 inch fish hoping to catch 50. Right? You don't go to you know, Wildcat in Boulder Junction to catch 50 inch muskie. Just don't, you know, nothing wrong with it. I love fishing there. It's fun. But if you expect to catch, you know, the Loch Ness Monster, you're going to be disappointed. So consider that. Is there a high probability that there are big fish in the system? Depending on body of water size and things of that nature, right? So don't beat yourself up if you're not seeing it. If those fish are present, night fishing is definitely something that can play, right? Something that I have seen work on pressured water that reinvigorates big fish fishing, if you will, right? We're catching big fish, but we're not catching them now because people are beating them up and they're seeing a lot outside of night fishing is jigging. Go with what's the least amount of stuff happening. And you have to talk about night fishing. I got to look here. Let's see when I've got this slated. I did a little write-up because I'll be traveling here. I got a head on an article here, and I've got there's a clicking and ticking in Canada article that's up on the app I just did before I was jet setting earlier this week. Jay's got a new bait of the week coming out here. Surely we'll have a Dr. Bob here in a second, but I'm gonna look here. I've got this set. So on the 12th, here in just a couple days, there's an article coming out about adjustments and game planning for night fishing. Now, obviously, night fishing can be helpful. What are we doing in that scenario? We're getting fish that are seeing less baits. We're taking some of the visual element out of it. And muskies will condition. Like, okay, if eating during the day is bad, let's eat at night. Well, if eating shallow and eating these spinning things that blare through the water at 400 miles is bad, let's do something else. There's not enough people that are willing to troll, night fish, or jig to condition muskies. Just not going to happen, right? So when I'm seeing pressure or been on pressure waters, trolling, night fishing, and jigging always stand out.
Okay.
Right? You're not going to get, I dare you, I'm going to tell you right now, whatever body of water you're on, go out and jig with a Bondi bait. And don't, I'm not saying do it poorly. Like, watch one of Bondi's videos. He's the master of it. We've done some stuff on Muskie Shop TV about it, but lift the bait about a foot, let it fall under tension. If you jig a body of water that has muskies in it and you get on the first break or the outside edge, you are going to contact fish. You put the time in doing it, you will catch a fish. I think it is a higher percentage yield hour for hour versus casting versus trolling. I think I've said that before, but if you put a gun to my head and said, you have to catch fish outside of the spawn, I could get a bite jigging anywhere, any lake, anytime, any day. Right? Now, the downside of that is you're jigging for 8 hours, right? It's one of those things like, you know, Well, you know, you're jigging. Again, nothing wrong with it. Not my preferred methodology. I think from a standpoint of effectiveness, hours in versus muskies in the net, that it's superbly high yield. Why is that? Well, if that fish was previously caught, recently caught, or is pressured, man, nobody's doing that to him, right? So muskies, if we adhere to the tenets of structure fishing, there's more muskies that are spending more time in deep water or the structural elements adjacent to littoral zone feeding zones throughout the course of the day. So that would be my commentary there. Add in jigging. If you control where you're at, troll, right? Do something different than everybody else. Because those big fish, if there's so much pressure that you're getting stunting in your casting, those big fish might go, oh, I don't even go shallow. Or there's boat pressure. I don't even go up there. Uh-uh. So that would be my first look. Mike, friends of mine that are not musky fishing have been telling me that they read all kinds of info that fishing for muskies in the rivers of Wisconsin is a waste of time. Lakes are perfectly fine. I've had some luck at night in the rivers, except for this year so far. You know, just curious what your guys' thoughts are. You know, Jay, you live by one. You fish it all the time. Plenty of muskies. What's the skinny here?
Night fishing on rivers?
No, he's saying that he said he had some luck night fishing rivers, but he's saying, okay, friends of his are saying it's not productive for muskies to be fishing any of the rivers in Wisconsin.
There's plenty of great, yeah, it's hogwash. There's plenty hogwash of great river system. Most of the Wisconsin river system, south of Minocqua, is exceptional musky fishing.
Down in Plover?
North of well, yeah, I guess north of Plover, south of Minocqua, that whole stretch in there. Lots of opportunity, lots of 50-inch fish get caught every year.
And guess what it's lacking?
Boating pressure.
Yeah. So that's why I like moving water. Always have, always will. You can take the boy off the creek, but you can't take the creek out of the boy, Jay. Creaker! Anyway. Rivers in Wisconsin are awesome. Some of your small streams. One of my favorite stories I've heard in a long time. Tom Rudis of the Muskie Shop.
Yeah.
Tom is just a superb dad and takes his son on adventures. And remember last year they went on that kayak trip from hell where they were like way further than they thought they were going to be and all that about this time of year. And he was seeing big muskies just cruising right through in real small water. So,
yeah.
There are opportunities. Most people, let me put it this way. Let's be blunt. And myself, the older I get, the more I fall into this trap. And even I'll admit, I was like, oh, we're going to do a video of John boat fishing. And I was like, oh, God, I don't want to drag my John boat out. Son of a bubba, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You get old. You get lazy. It's a pain in the butt. You got to drag it over a hill. You got to drag it up the hill. Opposed to I can just kind of, you know, launch out on my frickin' super rig and it's nothing. The harder it is to access, the less pressure it will have. The more
flat bugs, out truth.
Yeah, the more bugs, the less people.
Yeah.
Right? If you got to walk in, nobody's there. There's some water I fish here when I'm not being a complete lazy idiot where if I get in there, you're like, these things are, they're going to eat something. Right? So look at accessibility. If I was spry and 25, get you a freaking 16-foot John boat and the crappiest 2-stroke outboard off Amazon that's a weed eater with a prop, essentially, and get up in the skinny stuff. You know, you haven't thrown your back out yet. You can do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing better, Jay. You've done it. I've done it. There's nothing more exciting than fishing out of a small boat and hurting yourself just by moving too quickly. Didn't you do it here recently? You're fishing like, ah! So, what did you do the other day?
I set the hook on that monster walleye. I think and that was it. An hour later, I'm like, oh, man, my back hurts. Oh, yeah. A couple days later, it was just a pulled a muscle or something. It was cold out, you know? Your body's not warm. You're getting old, man.
You didn't follow the 43-step musky prep pre-workout program that you've
Fred's calisthenics program. I totally forgot about that.
The bank warm up.
I didn't warm up enough, Steve. I did not.
The last time I took the Jay gave me the JSE Pond Master 2000, which is the John Butt I'll take out sometimes. I don't even think I told you the last time I was dragging up the hill, I slipped and just rolled down the hill, which is not
fun.
In
that rainstorm or whatever.
Yeah, I basically laid at the bottom. Like, if I had a pistol in my pocket, I'd just end it now. You know, you're like, rah! Just like a fool. Anyway, get on some skinny water. Get on some stuff where no one else dares tread, and you are going to have some luck. And his question, we got kind of far afield here, goes back to the pressure question, water. But the harder it is, the less people will see there. And when it comes to rivers, most people are just not going to do it. Zach, your structure talks have finally set in. Thank you so much. It feels weird to spend 3 hours of mapping with the fish finder, but the last hour has been worth it every time. I've caught my largest pike, smallmouth, bass, largemouth in the last 2 days. I've been destroying on breakaway nets through the deeper section of the water in the lake. There are only a couple more deep spots on the lake to map when looking for more shallow structure. Do you have any recommendations? Thank you again. It does make you feel like you're on the next level when people are cruising past you in their boats with weird looks and you're parked in open water with no visual targets catching trophy class fish. Thank you.
There you go. Yes. Finally, that is what it's all about.
It's like after all the years of doing the podcast, he wins. We're released from the curse. We're done. Thank you, everybody.
That's awesome.
Like confetti's flying. Thank you. Zach, it's now you have to do the podcast every week. It's your problem now. anyway, we've been released.
I got that look yesterday from some boaters on the river.
Mm-hmm.
You know, middle of the river.
What's that guy doing
at the boat? Just go by at half throttle and throw some wake at me 20 feet away, you know.
The hell with them. Here's what's going on. Let me unpack a bit. Destroying on breakaway nets, deep section. That only feel a little dead deep. Shallow structure. Do you have any recommendations? We're looking for more shallow structure. Okay. I'm always going to look for shallow structure adjacent to these deeper breaks. So if you're finding deep spots, which is relative, and you know that now, deep spots on the lake, look for the shallow structures adjacent to them. Now, the key component is tight breaks and structural elements that have defined definitive connectivity to these zones. So let's say a shallow littoral weed bed, right? 12 feet and under of weeds adjacent to a deep holding area, right? Now I'm going to look at these two things. So everybody and their brother can identify weed beds, right? You can identify deep edges in their break lines. The mastery of this situation is their connectivity and where that matters and what matters. Okay? So, deep hole, shallow weeds. Your real, real job now is to find the connecting structure. At times, it can be infuriating because the map is so just bleh, or it's a really gradual drop to deep water. Sometimes it's like a neon sign flash and go boom, boom, boom. Here's a truncation or here's some kind of really hard. I want to say a hard edge, but there's a really hard transition that leads it to. So now your job is connecting shallow structure and deep structure. Once you find places that connect and commingle these things, Now you're rocking and rolling. Sounds like you're already freaking killing it, but that would be the next little factor of shallow structure, deep structure, how they connect. You're hitting these fish, you're destroying trophy class fish on deeper break lines. You're killing it. Really start looking for that move out. So the fluctuation of deep to shallow, they got to be following something. What are they following? Once you understand that, now, that allows you to pinpoint the best spots in a shallow zone, right? It's like an arrow, an X marks the spots. Well, this is where the highway exits. Everybody's got to go through this one spot, which is generally your spot on spot on spot on spot on spot structurally. Right. So find the connecting point. There is a thread. There is some kind of yarn between the deep good and the shallow good. How do they connect? At times, it's so gradual that it's like, whatever. Sometimes it's a cover thing. Sometimes it's rocks, whatever. Find the connectivity that draws a beeline between A and B, shallow and deep. Once you do that, you got them. You got them drilled. Good job on that. That would be my thing. You know, that is how I'm going to differentiate my shallow structures from... That's how I'm going to grade my shallow structures. Like, okay, this isn't connected to deep water, so I think it holds less trophy fish potential. Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. But in general, I'm right. The biggest of the big fish are adjacent to the deepest water. The easiest way to visualize this, and not everybody water has this, a point that comes off of the shoreline and terminates at the main basin depth. Right? So a point coming off the shoreline that terminates at your main basin depth, that is like easy. Once you understand that concept, it's a ramp. It's like the ramp of fish. The ramp, the fish go up the ramp, the fish go down the ramp, right?
Mm-hmm.
Up the ramp, down the ramp. This might be part of that Combat Rat song, Jay. We just changed
the word. Could be, yeah.
Combat Rats go up the ramp. But the fish go up the structural ramp and down the structural ramp. It's the fish escalator. That's what a point is. Up and down, up and down. If you need a conceptualization, that's the best thing to look at. Not every lake has that, but you go, oh, what's kind of like the truncating point? How are they sort of forced? Not forced, but what makes the most logical sense is a pathway or a transitional element from shallow to deep. That would be the trick. Dan! Hey, guys. I do a musky league during the week after work and fish by myself. And also on the weekends, since nobody wants to chuck baits with me all day. We call him Crying Dan. Nobody loves me. Anyway, I was wondering on how you'd fish by yourself. It was for 5 hours or a full day trip since you don't have multiple baits getting cast on the same structure at the same time. Well, I'll tell you, first and foremost, if I have to fish by myself, I've got limited time. Let's call your 5 hour trip. It's a half day trip. Okay. Got to dial in on something. Okay. I am going to first and foremost do the same thing that I always do. 3-point bait check, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about it before. In a certain musky book, it's talked about. We'll just start calling it that. In a certain musky book. I don't want to bring it up, but I expand it. But in this certain musky book, there's a system of we're checking mid, shallow, and deep. So we have a starting point that is educated, right? We're not just guessing. We're letting the lake tell us what to do. So check there. Once we've ascertained bait fish are mid, shallow, and deep, muskies should therefore be mid, shallow, or deep, we can target zones that should be productive based on structural study. All right. Let's say you just got some spots or you know what's going on. Let's skip that, but that's the first thing I want to do when I'm by myself. The reason being, the reason being that's so important, we have less rods to dial in on, right?
Less presentations.
It feels weird to me when I'm not in the boat with somebody. It's bizarre. I cannot recall, maybe I said on the podcast, but off the top of my head, I can't really recall the last time I was like musky fishing by myself, right? I'm like going, okay, let's put this dude on a meat grinder and put this dude on whatever, and you know, we got the buffet going where I'm by myself. Okay. What I can tell you is it is far more important to understand seasonality, structure. There's fireworks. Do you hear those? Goodness, still going off. So we have fireworks going off, dogs barking. But it's important that we understand seasonality, forage movement, and staging, right? And the structural elements so much more than just hitting spots because you can't really cover that much water, right? So as a solo angler, half-day trip, 5 hours on that kind of day, understand where the bait are. Now, make a super intelligent call on your presentations. based upon running depth and size of forage, right? So it's not about where are the muskies, it's where the bait, what's the forage size, what should I be looking for? Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to narrow my scope of search based upon an intelligent decision based upon forage staging, bait fish staging. So I'm narrowing my scope to, let's say, mid, right? Let's say there's nothing shallow, there's nothing deep, everything's on, most lakes have, let's call it, Jake, the 12-foot break line, right? 10 sure. to 12. I think it's a puddle if it's not 10 feet deep, unless it's a river, but let's say a lake, it's 10 to 12-foot break line. There seems to be a congregation of bait fish that are suspended at 8 feet above that. So they're 8 feet off the bottom. So the bottom is 12 to 10 and the bait fish are at 8. It would be a relatively safe assumption that a predating muskie in that area is going to be staged below that bait at the time you got there. Right? So let's say you go out, 5-hour trip, sunsets up there right now, when, Jay?
9:15 or something like that. 9:15.
Okay, so you got 5 hours. Let me try to just put my head in this headspace. So if we got 5 hours and it's 9 as sunset and you're coming in because the old lady's mad, she's big angry, Jay, if you're not home, you launched at 4 o'clock, right? I did the big math, and according to the supercomputer, it's 4 o'clock. It's got 5 hours. Okay. Well, it would make sense. I'm guessing that pretty much based on forage movement on a typical day, we're not talking weather or water conditions yet, that bait fish would move out structurally to deeper water to a mid-depth point. So that jives. If I'm seeing the bait there, I'm looking at the time of day in conjunction with conditions and forage. It's going to tell me what to throw to be most effective. So I need baits that are getting down a minimum of 8 feet. Very, very simple equation of deep running jerk baits, right? Bulldogs, Medusas, Krakens. You're not going to throw your top water and be successful. We need baits that are getting down in that zone that run appropriately there. So I'm going, where's the bait? Where's it staged at? What baits run effectively in that zone? How big is the bait that I'm throwing at? And then I'm dialed in on not only my location, but my presentation. So the only thing we have to dial in on after that is speed. So you have you're relegated to only a handful of baits. You theoretically mm-hmm. yeah. throw and I'm getting ahead of myself, but okay. The knee-jerk reaction for fish staged at bait fish are at 8, muskies feed forward and up, we need to be hitting 8 minimally, are going to be Krakens, Bulldogs, Medusas, Tubes. That's kind of your best game there. You have some crankbait options, but I would be thinking about those sinking super deep crankbait options as a cold front methodology or a super slow thing. So we're dialing in on speed. So bait's there. The time of day, the seasonality jives with this. I'm going to start with these jerkbait presentations, and then my follow-up would be quickly going probative cast with countdown or deep running crankbaits as a follow-up to that, because often we're relegated to big baits run deep, your bigger bulldogs, your Medusa, all this stuff, right? So the heavier a bait is, the faster you have to work it to get action, right? Because they just fall. So I would go jerk baits, countdown crank baits, or super deep running crank baits as a casting thing. If fish are staged 10 to 8 or 10 to 12, that 8-foot bait range, I'm going to quickly look at trolling as effective methodology. So the way I'm breaking this down is just instantly. It takes me, Jay, we've done it before. We're going to do it here next week. 10 minutes, man. How many times have we gone out in the boat? I'm not itching to cast. What would you say? I mean, honest to goodness, we go out on neighbor Steve's Hacienda Lake, right?
Yeah.
And the first move I'll make, we get the boat launched. We get away from the mosquitoes. And I schmutz. you schmutz along. You got that little hump over there. You got some edge. You got some open water. I'm just looking at my graph gun. There's
checking it out.
There's
checking
one, two, and three.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of stop. Thank goodness people are starting to get it. You're going to have a better time if you spend the time doing the homework. There's nothing worse, and this is just life. Some of us can wing it, right, Jay? I've showed up places and winged it, and nobody knew the difference, right? I got to speak. We got to film a video. We got to do this. I got to do that, you know? Wing it. All right. Got to do a podcast. We don't have a script for the podcast. We just wing it. But you can't wing it with Muskie. Not very often, not successfully. You have to go. 10 minutes dedicated to getting a real grasp on the situation as it is, not as you want it. Let me say it again. Get a grip on the situation as it is, not as you want it. Once you have that, once you have your head wrapped around that and you're confident in that, you can formulate a positive game plan.
Okay.
So we go out. It's 4 o'clock. We got 5 hours. I've identified the majority of betas in that zone. Cool. I'm going to target that zone. Then, if I'm not successful, I'm going to readdress my presentation and my speed. Right? While always keep an eye for bait fish or other fish to restage as the day goes on. Because you're not going to go out very many days. And the best musky days we all love. It is drizzly. It is low-hanging clouds. It's not storming, but it's just on the cusp. They're all shallow. They're shallow all day. They're rarer than hen's teeth. Right now in Wisconsin, Jay said it rains every day. Well, what's it look like when it's not raining, Jay? Back and forth. High sun. No wind. Big wind. You know, it's in varying degrees at all times. We're always chasing the cabbage dragon, Jay.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Right. So,
you know,
go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I have a big question.
No.
You're out by yourself. You don't have other people in the boat for the first time ever, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You don't have those other presentations. Now, are you fishing? Are you covering ground faster than you would with other people in the boat?
Absolutely
in this case?
Not. Slower.
Slower. You're confident in the areas that you've detected is going to be as productive as more than anything else.
So that
and
is,
you're going to fish slower.
So
okay.
Yeah, like I said, I believe it through the magic of the technology. Before we start answering questions, I took a tinkle, Jay. So I forgot about the element of the other people a little bit in some capacity. So what I'm reliant on when I'm angling by myself is, and I think I touched on it, is a more affirmative grip on reality of the situation and addressing it, like I said, through boat positioning, identifying forage, and appropriate presentation. Now, with that being said, if you got two guys in the boat, you could do a deep crankbait and a jerkbait. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to select, let me put circle back in some regard. I'm going to select the most appropriate lure that I can cover the most water with effectively. Because I said speed is the only caveat we've yet to determine. Right? So you may need to go through a location that you go structurally, it checks the box. Bait fish, it checks the box. Seasonality, it checks the box. You may need to go through it 3 times. Now, if I'm a solo angler in Wisconsin, you might be from, who knows, Iowa. It doesn't matter. Let's say you're in a one rod per one man state, right?
Yeah.
And I've got in my head just the scenario of, you know, outside the weeds, on the outside break, something that we could plow through, bam, 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 if you got 2 or 3 guys in the boat. With this, you're going to need to strategically cast. You know, if you believe me and Dr. Bob and the science of how a muskie sees and feels, well, your cast probably shouldn't land more than 5 feet apart. So we
right
need
on.
To really truncate our target zone. Right? Now that's easier said than done. There is an edge that is a mile long. I'm going to utilize every tool I have. I'm going to, let's say in this scenario where the bait's at 8 and everything looks like it's right for that. Kraken, first and foremost, right? Then I would follow that up, turn right around, and I'll say this, and I'm not tooting my horn. Jay, how many times have you and I fished a spot where we've gone in, fished the inside, turned around, and fished the outside, right? While I'm making casts that were directly in our boat path before us. So fish the edge, flip around, fish the outside edge, right? While making occasional casts that are straight in front of the boat so you hit the parallel. So if we've gridded out this spot inside, outside, and dead center, and we've not had any action, and you're still confident in your patterning, come back through it with a one rod trolling pass. Boom, done. You didn't catch a fish, move on. You see what I'm saying? So you're going to have to break it down. I would say that this is just from guiding. I'd say the most problematic component of most muskie anglers' game is not their ability to cast, but their inability to group their casts. That makes sense? And I don't think it's because they're incapable of it. I think it is because that every muskie is ahead of the boat. Right? The next fish has to be in front of the boat.
So you're saying, you know, some dudes are, they're running and gunning. Let's say there's two or three guys in the boat, and the guy's moving at a pretty, you know, good click. He's going, you know, maybe, you know, like a mile an hour, which is pretty fast.
Yeah, it's pretty fast.
So you're fishing this weed line, and, you know, the guys in back of them are like, well, his cast just landed there. He didn't get a hit. Grass is always greener. I want to cast ahead, you know.
Ahead. Yeah.
So everyone's thinking faster, and that's just it's like the normal.
I don't even think from a speed standpoint, it's a point well taken. Don't get me wrong. But I'm always, if you fished on my boat, I'll look at you, go, stop throwing in the front of the boat. Right? Square up to the gunwale and throw directly in front of yourself. Backing things up, everybody. Let's take a breath here.
Yeah.
This is two things at once that are not exclusive from one another. Boat control. If your boat control is too fast, it influences your casting spacing. Right? Based on the way they sub-tend, their eyeballs are in the water. If we need visual stimuli coupled with, we need lateral line stimuli coupled with a visual stimuli. For a negative and a neutral fish, we need to be landing 5 feet apart minimum. Right?
I agree.
With that being said, and you're going, why? There's no way. It's a 4-foot fish. Again, really quickly, vibration takes time to reach a fish and for them to respond. It's fast in water, but the further away, the less they feel it. It's less enticing unless they're fired up and hunting, actively hunting, right? You know, you feel a puff of air. Okay, that's not wind. If you get it close to them, there's more vibration. It's more intense. They're more likely to engage, right? There is dissemination. There is a muting factor of the vibration of your bait through the medium of water. That should dictate your casting coverage. So saturation casting ensures that maximum vibration is sent to the muskie, that he can couple the vibration with some kind of visual profile that's going to make them engage. That has to happen in whether they feel it and then they see it, whether they simply feel it or whatever, they have to have a certain degree of stimuli to react. It's just a fact. I mean, it's not, I can't think of a sexy way to put it. They have to have a certain degree of stimuli before they respond positively. If this was not true, you would throw a bucktail on one end of the lake and every muskie would run to you when he felt it.
No, that's a good point.
Oh, there's double tens. Get him, boys. No. I have had, and I because of fishing and moving water, I got out of the front of my boat. We've talked about it before. It gives me better boat control and current and all this stuff. Dude, it doesn't matter. It's who landed closest to the fish every time. Rarely is it like this front of the boat thing. Sometimes you'll get super fired up fish that are willing to go crazy, but whatever. Proximity, 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 proximity.
Yeah.
And this is regardless. Well, yeah. With solo angler or not, like I said, the casting proximity equation is quickly broken by go figure eight of your bucktail on one end of the lake. Why they not all show up? Because the vibration disseminated through the water and was weakened. It was not enough stimuli to spur the result that you wanted. Right? Every night that frickin' I got a neighbor. I listen, if it was legal to own landmines, I would plant them for him because he's got a car that goes bumpity bump, right? this crap, right? Got to get up at 6 in the morning for a guy trip. I can hear him coming a mile away. It's more vibration. My house is shaking more the closer he is. And the stimuli gets closer to me, and I get madder, Jay.
I was just going to say that.
Right? It is not the way that people like to look at fishing, but it is true. This is why when we talk about fishing weeds, saturation casting is important to weeds because weeds are not good at translating vibration. Weeds are actually a deadening factor. Right? All we are doing when we are fishing is we are creating disruption in the water associated with a visual target. That's it.
Tip from a backseat angler who fishes the back of the boat a lot. When we go out, I always take the back, right?
Yeah.
Just pay attention where the front two guys casts are landing and try not to land in the same spot.
Nobody. Yeah. You're never, and it's like you're never, there's never dead water. That's a whole other thing.
No.
But trying to get back on track here to my dude about solo angling. Is that you're going to have to narrow your scope of search and know how to search that area effectively and efficiently as possible, right? How do I cover this? What the reason we came up with this hypothetical? Excuse me, goodness gracious, this taco night and it just fell apart. How do we effectively target the zone that all of the arrows are pointing that we need to target, right? How do we target that zone as efficiently and effectively as possible? That is through saturation. So if you have two guys in the boat, there's an exponent that increases your output up to whatever, right? So you're going to have to be smarter about your coverage, more diligent in boat control, allowing for said coverage to be at maximum efficiency, right? So take advantage of all tools, casting, trolling, jigging to cover that area and then move on, boom, right? I like trolling, especially if solo. There's a video, I'll put it on, like, I don't think we'll use it for Muskie Shop, but there's like a solo troll fish. And I said, I couldn't remember the last time I did it. It was last year. I had a client that got sick and I was on the water like, whatever, I'm already here, dude. And I whacked like an upper 40s. By myself, of course, I got cheese in my beard. That's why I won't use it for the Husky Shop, right? I'm eating a sandwich, and I'm just like, man, fish hits, and freaking cheese and meat go everywhere, you know.
Awesome.
But I'll put a clip on the app or something at some point. But, you know, in that scenario, that's the last time I can remember doing it. It was like, okay, I know what the pattern was at that time. They're down 6 feet. What am I going to do? What's the most maximum efficient thing I can do? Troll, blah, 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 blah. Think from an efficiency standpoint. Catching fish is fun. The process of catching them usually sucks if you're doing it the right way. You got to be like, you know, German efficiency. right? What are we doing? How are we doing it? Are we the most effective? Well, the only way we know it's effective is by doing it. And the only way we know what's effective is through process of elimination. So tight cast, coverage, and then move on. You can be a stone cold killer as a solo muskie angler, but that is going to be systemic of the fact that you're a stone cold structure fisherman and you understand seasonality and proper presentations. That's what's really going to help you there. You know, as far as a full day, apply this whole stuff. That is a rabbit hole, and I apologize. I hope it gave you some ideas. Ian, when do you start targeting open water muskies? Ian, never stop. Can't stop, won't stop. There's your answer. There always are muskies in open water.
Mm-hmm.
Always. That is going to happen. Now, are they truly pelagic and just out in the ether there? Well, we talked about panoptics the other day because of pressure and scoping pressure, some of them. Some are transitory. Some are just moving around. You will have open water suspended muskies year round. Case in point, before they go in and spawn, guess what they do, Jay? They stage outside of spawning areas and just kind of hang. So the entire time it's possible from beginning to end of the year. The most effective seems to be later in the summer, in the mid-July, August, a lot of suspendos. You know, going into the fall, you'll see a propensity to move in shallow again. And then in the colder water months, they'll stage out. Now,
yeah.
What I'm going to do, back to the same answer. There's always just a handful of answers here. It's a logical thing. When am I going to focus on open water muskies, Jay? When there's bait staging in open water. You know,
it boils down to the 3-point check system when you start the day.
Right. And it's something as silly as, you know, Minnesota. What's one heck of a hot bite in Minnesota? The Cisco spawn.
Yeah.
Where are they at? They're freaking all over open water, moving into reef systems and doing their business. So, you know, will you on occasion find a muskie that is completely out in the middle of nowhere just hanging out? Absolutely.
Muskies never sleep, Steve. They never sleep.
Well, they turn off a little bit of their brain and go in a solvent stage about outside of that, and they never truly sleep. They actually go and fish have this weird solvent thing that they can do. But nonetheless, there's always open water opportunities. I'm going to allow the bait fish and the conditions to dictate when that is. So it's not a seasonal thing. It is a conditional thing. Nolan, what would you say would be the best lure to use on June 5th? Jay, we're a little late. Wow. We have been behind. Don't know, bud. What I'll say is this.
Kind of vague, but okay.
And that's fine. We're all at different. Yeah, we're all everyone's at different experience levels. If I'm searching for what bait to use on a certain day, let's look at what time of year it is. So June's going to be in the summer, and so we're in July. But let's say you're fishing now. No one's fishing now. It's July. What do I use? What do I do? Let's look at our conditions, right? And we know we can find muskies from shallow, mid to deep. Our bait decision's going to be made on that same thing. Where are the bait fish and where are the fish at? But we need to look at weather and like to keep it just as simplistic as this. The brighter it is, the deeper I go. The darker it is, the shallower I go. Okay? Look at your graphs if you got them. Look at your bait fish and try to make a decision on what makes the most sense. You know, the weather sometimes tells you what the scenario mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the bait fish. So if you're looking for what bait do I throw today, you know, it can get really complex. It could be as simple as just throw something that's going to be deep running because it's really bright. You know, dig in on the subject of musky fishing.
Yeah, and maybe he doesn't right have good electronics, too. So, no, I mean, you just had a good point, you know, judging on the day, you know, on the time of day. If it's early morning and it's not extremely bright out yet, try some shallow running stuff like bucktails.
Well, like dude said, I should double back. There was like the other parts. What would you do on a full day or whatever? We're talking about the 5-hour thing. Well, you start shallow and you move out and you fish mid and deep all day long, and then you move back in shallow. That's it. That's typical game plan outside of those perfect days where they're staying up shallow and conditions are great. That's a very bare bones thing. Jim, okay, after sending an email on types of blades to use in stain water about a week ago, I ran across your Ultimate Musky Fishing with Spinner Baits, and it explains a lot about blades and their actions. Thank you for that. I'm also interested. I need a new chair, Jay. I apologize, people. This chair is the same.
It's a squeaker.
It's getting on my nerves. I apologize if you hear it in the podcast. And he says, thanks for that show. I'm also interested in your opinion on what blades you use in different water clarities and why, since muskies are supposedly visual hunters. Okay, so he's saying they're visual hunters more than vibrational. It's backwards. They're more vibrational than visual, but we'll go on from there. I'm asking, you know, what would you use in certain tannic waters, different light penetrations? I know you're going to tell me you'd use a Kraken instead, LOL. No, I would not, but hey, no harm in trying. So, different blades at different depths, okay? Well, we talked about in the Ultimate Musky Fishing the Spinnerbait video that came out, less than a week ago, Jay.
Yep.
I'm talking about some different tactics, which are, obviously, we can straight retrieve, but some ripping, twitching, jigging, all kinds of fun stuff with spinnerbaits. Yep. Now, when we get to the modification section, I'm discussing different weighting options. That could be for different casting scenarios, different structural approaching different structural elements appropriately. I think I cover that, right? So, blade choice is not about water composition. It's about light penetration. So, watch the video, and if you check out what I'm saying, talking about different degrees of lift, right?
Crucial.
It's not water collar, it's light penetration. We always want to be below the level of light penetration. Therefore, if it's 7 feet down, willow, easy call. It's cloudy and kind of, you know, we got good cow cover and all this stuff, run Colorado. And I'd say on a straight retrieve basis. Now, we see different attraction to different vibration, sure. But the reason a Steve's Meat Grinder has a number 9 mag willow blade is for maximum thump at maximum depth, right? Which is cyclical. Everything's cyclical. We were just talking about proximity. The more vibration a bait puts off, the greater the proximal effect it will have. Okay? The reason double 10s work well and they're so effective is because they put off so much vibration. It's an acute signal that's reached at further. It's not that muskies, this is my opinion, flat out. Because it's all the same thing. The reason double 10s were on fire so much when they first came out is because people could be shitty casters and still pull fishing. Right? Greater vibration means it goes out further, right? Big thump, it goes out to the sides, down, all around that bait, right? The vibration travels further. It's a bigger thump that calls them in, right? So the more stimuli that we have, the greater your proximity is. The louder a sound is, the further it's heard, right?
True.
Simple. Talk about my neighbor. The more he turns up his boom, 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 he's probably listening to Black Eyed Peas or whatever. He's got that boom, boom, pow. The louder it is, the further you hear it. Well, what's loud in fishing? I'm not talking rattles. They don't hear the way we want them to hear. So the bigger the vibration, the more likely, the greater the likelihood of engagement. Now, where people struggle is muskies don't always want big stuff. Small baits and effectiveness with less vibration needs to come from tighter casting. Does that make any sense, Jay?
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
When you speak, when you whisper, Jay, if you whisper to somebody across the room, do they hear you?
Right.
You have to get right in their ear to whisper. Right? That's a fly.
Proximity.
Right. If you whisper, that's a musky fly. If you scream at the top of your lungs, it's double tens and bulldogs. Everything else is a degree in between. Are you screaming? Or are you whispering? Right? That's it.
You ever notice musky whispers catch more fish?
No, shut up. I'm being serious.
It's true.
Musky whispers. Oh, musky whiner.
You don't call a good stick a musky loudmouth.
No.
You call him a musky whisperer.
That's true.
You're on to something, man.
You got more finesse. Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's oh, my goodness. All right. I'm down a rabbit hole, but I guess I'm on a tangent that explains all. Maybe I'm truncating all the answers to the tangent, but it doesn't matter. Let's cover it again. From the tiniest presentation as a whisper to the biggest bait we have as a scream. Right? You will not think about this. Take a rattle trap and throw it 30 feet apart. You know, every cast, how good it is. You got to cover. Bam, 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 bam. And the bigger the bait, the wider you can cast. Well, why is everybody so successful in July and August? Oh, well, they get to use big baits. It's hand grenade season, everybody. Wow. Everybody gets to use a hand grenade. Congratulations. Throw your hand grenades. Everybody went musky fishing. They did good. The boys did good, Jay. Season's over. It's September. The hand grenades don't work anymore. They're not biting. Yeah.
Yeah, let's see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's why I'm talking about the bucktails and the topwaters are out. Anyway, goodness. Yeah. You know, it just is what it is. So, back to the question. Vibration blade decision is primarily made on light penetration, right? I'm not going to go one for one. If the day before conditions were great and they were definitely dialed in on single Colorado blades, and you're like, that was it, and you knew the difference, right? Not like you caught one fish. I'm going, they only wanted that. There's certain times, and I think a lot of times, people get so dialed in, like, they're on single weights. How do you know that? If you say they are, you're going to convince yourself that they're solely on that. They're on single weights. How many fish did you catch? One. How many follows did you see or have on imaging? Well, the one I caught. How many hours of output? How many? You see what I'm saying? You can't judge. A pattern's not a singularity. And so, like,
yes, yes, I can, yes. And with musky fishing, Steve, it's all about, you know, that horrible mythical, you know, fish of 10,000 cast crap, you know.
Right.
So people have that in their mind that, you know, you get one or you get a response a day, you're onto something, you're onto the pattern. That is the pattern. And hopefully it doesn't, you don't con yourself into having that carry over the next day, which is a completely different day.
Well, yeah, most days it's not the same. Like if things, the wind doesn't change and the clouds don't change, and it's perfect, you might be in the ball game, right? But it's not that they're dialed in on X. Okay, take it down to swim baits, whatever. I caught one on a Poseidon. Okay, cool. Great. So for the rest of the week, you're going to throw a white Poseidon and burn it, regardless of conditions. That's what people do. That's what they do. It is a day-to-day, hour-to-hour, sometimes minute-to-minute assessment of what's going on. That's if you're on a body of water that's stable. I fish reservoirs and rivers that fluctuate depth and current rate and flow. The more compounding factors you have, the more complicated the equation, which I'll tell you, this goes back to like most of the question we've been getting, because I think the general consensus is, how do I find muskies, catch muskies? That's always it, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, that's the whole point of everything we're doing. But a lot of questions we get this time of year. You have to be paying attention to everything around you. The act of casting a bait and the act of the retrieval is important. But it is completely a useless endeavor if you're nowhere near a muskie. It doesn't matter. The guys I get to fish with, if you guys listen to the podcast, and I always just call it straight, I can call Steve Herbeck out of nowhere and just bother him, you know? Call Booker up, just bother him. I know these guys. It's not like business. It's friends, right? And a lot of the greats have been able to fish with. It's not a matter that they've got the latest and greatest. The baits have changed, right? What was cool previously isn't cool now, or what's going to be cool next year isn't, you know. It is a matter of strategic patterning. You know, I say to people on my boat, Jay, the first hard part of muskie fishing is knowing where they're at. The second hard
location.
Part is, yeah. The second hard part is getting them to eat. I think location is far harder than getting them to eat. Right? Because if we know where they're at, then all we have to do is close proximity, and we have to make adjustments in size, right? Are we whispering or are we screaming? Anyway, God, I'm on my soapbox. I
apologize. Yeah, so dial in on your location if you can. Make all attempts, and then, you know, be prepared to use a bait that you don't like to throw.
Yes.
Great point. That's super deterrent. You know, with a lot of people, it's just like, oh, God, I hate running jerk baits. You know, for some reason, people don't like to have some kind of, you know, that erratic rhythmic thing going. They want to throw something constant and buzzing. They can feel it.
Let me say this.
You know?
I'm going to say something, and this is absolutely, giant caveat. Massive caveat. This is an opinion, and it is completely unmeritous. My least favorite bait to throw is a beaver bait. Right? That is because it flings water all over me. And since the day I got one, I was like, ugh, right? Flinging water all over the boat. And I'm a freaking, most days I'm a neat freak, you know, that kind of thing. I put a client on one, they're getting me wet. I got one on, I'm getting wet. There are times when that is what is going to work because the running depth and the profile, right? Because I can take all the weights out of this thing and it'll run ridiculously shallow as a jerk bait. I have them in the boat. I throw them. I'm successful with them because conditions demand it. I don't enjoy throwing them personally. If you're a gasp, grabbing your pearls, he said he didn't like a bait. Beaver bait is freaking awesome. I've caught giant fish on it. It is highly effective, and it will always be in my boat. Right? I don't not throw that bait because I don't want stuff. And Jay, I'm kind of OCD at times where it's like, I don't want water drops on my screens, you know? And that's just like, I'm telling this or saying this because like what I want and what the fish want are not the same thing. So who cares? What's the point, right? If I don't enjoy throwing the bait, screw me. The fish want it. That's what we got to do because we got shallow fish on a jerkbait scenario on something we need to really have really good depth control on. And it needs to undulate, right? Well, they're not on shallow regular dogs or the regular whatever mag dogs, but man, sometimes that beaver bait, they just come unglued because it's got more action at slower speeds. It's unweighted for me.
Sure.
There it is. Totally great bait. As far as its effectiveness and everything it does, it's perfect. As far as me going, I'm sick of getting water on myself. It is what it is, right? You see what I'm saying? I'm not talking about the bait. I'm pointing out a scenario where it's like you just said, Jay, it's not about what you want to do or you don't like this style of bait. It's about shut up and do what is most effective.
Yeah. Everybody's got lures they don't like throwing. Absolutely.
You know, you might hate a Titan. I hate Titans. They suck. Well, if they want dive and rise and they want it super slow, you better figure out something. Right? Because if not, if you're unwilling to adjust your game plan and tailor it to the fish, you're going to have a real bad time. Mike, great show. Is your mate's music available? No, he wants music for deer camp. Mike, you can always listen back and just play the intros. There is most of the Slime Life Records compilations are sold out right now. So just listen to the intros and play them. Mark, is there any time of year that moon phase have more effect on muskie fishing, or is it more important to try to fish during those times? In the summer, do you favor fishing sunrise or sunset? If you have to pick only one. Okay. This is loaded. Let's take it down to its core. I'm just in that mood, Jay, if you can't tell. Right? We need to fish both sunrise and sunset in the majors and minors to make a determination of our patterning. There's no, like, this is going to work. Fool's errand. Right? That's like walking to the casino. If you're not, like, say, Mark, you're dialed in and you've been fishing all week long and you're fishing consistently, you'll see results by fishing as much as you can and dialing in on it. But going, I'm going to fish sunrise this Saturday and smoke them. Walking to the casino, drop 10 grand on, you know, 21 black, see how it goes. I don't know. People ask me all the time, when are we leaving for our trip? You know, we're booked September 19th. When are we leaving? I have no clue. And my canned response, if you ever fished on my boat, you'll get a text from me that says, you'll ask when we're leaving. I said, we're dealing with weather, water, wild animals. I will make a determination, most likely 2 days ahead of time, based on up-to-date current assessment of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I know what I'm doing tomorrow. I don't know what I'm doing the day after. Right? Again, confirmation bias. They're on the major. Are they still tomorrow? Nothing lasts forever, baby. Are they? Or was it today? I think that's what's frustrating about muskie fishing. That's what I love about it. I want to say this. You never hear me talk about the fight, Jay. I don't think the fight. He fought like hell. I'm playing chess with these things that got the brain the size of a pea, right? And they're regard whatever, however they ended up getting here, creationism or whatever, however you want to look at it. They're as dialed in for their environment as they can get. We're playing chess, and I just want to fool them. Mm-hmm. Once they bite and they're hooked, I don't care after that. It's a deeper understanding what the apex predator is doing. They're always going to do what's best for them. So they're dialing in on things. We're trying to dial in on them with minimal information. That's the game. You're a strategist, right?
Yep.
Okay. This is something I've thought about a bunch, working on another book, but it's kind of like the theory of it in some sense of some of the stuff I've been writing is, you know, you're strategizing against an opponent with minimalistic intel, conceptualizing what they will be doing. Okay. I know what route you take to work every day, Jay. Right? I know where you go to work. I know where you work. I know how you get there. Right? So, between your house and where you work at, I know that route.
Yeah.
Right? I know, and it's just like, it sounds kind of murdery. I learned this from the Smitties, but so, let's say I'm going to murder Jay. Sorry, Jay. It's a bad example, but I love it now. I know where you live, and I know where you work. Well, through study and listening, I know where Jay grocery shops. So I know where he gets his food. And I know what he eats for breakfast. It's getting creepier, right?
God, that's weird you mentioned that, because I went to camps, Super Value in town.
Yeah.
The day before the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Jake Smith was there waiting for me.
Dang it. He smelled blood in the water. But
yeah.
You know, jokingly, it's like, you know, patterns. So Jay will call me on my way to work. I know where he's at. I'm 13 hours away, but I conceptualize. I know what the route he's traveling generally is. That's structure.
Yeah.
That's structure. I go the same way to the water every single day. Right? Habitually. Okay? That's first and foremost. Right? Now, you know, and I'm putting this as lame in terms as possible when it comes to patterning. Jay, when you leave for work tomorrow morning, right? What will you do differently tomorrow morning than you will do in December?
Not much. I won't warm up my car as much.
There you go. You changed your pattern slightly based on what?
Climate, weather.
Yep. Yep. So, you see what I'm going for?
Yeah, I know what you're going for.
Right? Jay augments his pattern based upon the season. You change your pattern of what to wear clothing-wise, other than free musky shirts. Jay has saved more money on clothing in his career than any man I've ever seen. Jay, when's the last time you bought a shirt from a store?
It's been probably 25 years.
He's got some of the greatest t-shirts ever, but it's like stuff like companies that have been out of business for 20 years. Jay's got a t-shirt that's like brand new from them. But anyway,
I'll get around to wearing it someday.
I say this, not I'm joking about murdering Jay, but I say this because you'll see it in your own life. You don't change too terribly much in what you're doing in the day-to-day unless something extreme happens. Well, Jay, why would you change your route to work? Well, there's an accident or something happens, right?
Yeah.
Boat traffic. You just spent Monday through Friday afternoon being a muskie. I go from the deep. I go to the shallow. I eat my food. I do my thing. And then Friday night, something changes and everything goes crazy and you change what you're doing.
Oh, it's summer. It's super busy. Traffic's a nightmare. I'm going to take a different route.
There you go. Perfect. That is how you conceptualize this game.
It's true.
So that
I'm not going up in 2 feet of water to eat bluegills this morning. No way.
All the Googans are in. All the idiots are in.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is it, now as a muskie, like thinking about it in you know, in a sentient manner. No, he's just going what's easiest for him, what's most comfortable.
Yeah,
but that would be something to think about, because this guy's question is, what time of day is better? Too many factors to say bam, 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 bam. Now, do I see seasonal preference to like July and August, new moon, full moon? Yeah, they're both good. Majors are typically good, but there's so many factors in and around that we've got to look at it as a whole, right? You have to look at it as, what day of the week is it? What is the weather? That's why this is such a complicated equation. That's why it's so attractive. Jacob, I'm a big fan of fishing deep, clear Cisco-based lakes. Many of these lakes that I fish are over 15 feet of visibility. During the midsummer months, working 15 to 25-foot shelves, the dump in the main lake basins are where the fish seem to live. Tubes and deeper-running suics have been my only source of bites on these lakes. Any other baits that get deep, I've tried, and they get follies but never strikes, so I feel rather limited in my options. Deep, fast, and reckless, no extra flash or rattle seems to be the key. Any ideas to diversify for daytime fishing? So, tubes, deep-running jerk baits, 15 to 25 feet.
And shine away from rattling, loud, clanking things.
Heavyweight, when I think that,
it sounds like he's like, yeah, you know, deep running spinner baits aren't the ticket on this.
Well, if it's
on the clear system like that,
something that immediately it's like Euro stuff. Like I was texting with Tim's brother, he's got a Magnus prototype, I caught a monster pike on it, by the way. And we're talking about running depth. You know, he's like, okay, I'm easily hitting 2 meters. This is the extra weight we should, you know, I'd recommend you should probably do for like Grimoire and the Netherlands and all this stuff. We're talking about that. I'm like, okay. And, you know, I'm going, what's the quietest baits? There are rubber swim baits and jerk baits, right? So tubes are doing good for you. Something I would train a straight retrieve is something like a swimming dog or a Poseidon that's just weighted down to nobody's business, right? Just weight it down. Do it evenly. So put 3/4 on the front hanger, 3/4 on the back hanger with some bell sinkers and see what that does for you, right? That's going to be quiet. You can work it really erratic. So we need erratic and we need deep. We need erratic, deep, no flash. Let me double check this. Deep, fast, and erratic with no flash or rattle. Okay. So I obviously use tubes work. The jerk baits work. They're quiet baits. Get your swim baits. Weight the crap out of them, right? Pop them up like a tube. Straight retrieve them. Bam, bam, bam. Really, you know, crank that.
Original Bondi baits, too.
I'll tell you. Well, the Bondi baits, I've caught a bunch of muskies yo-yoing Bondi baits.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Throw them out and yo-yo them deep. Down structure. Mm-hmm. You could take the blade off. It's just a jerk bait. You're going to probably get the same kind of response as the tube would on that. It's going to run, you know, very deep. Other stuff. I mean, a Big Fork Reef Digger is a heck of a deep running bait. And they make some really big models that will cast down exceptionally deep. Right? If you think a crank would do it, because a crank's going to really open up the doors to some versatility in what you can do.
Legend perch bait, straight perch bait.
We're talking about the deep running baits, Legend Perch, the Big Fork Reef Digger. You could get away with if it's 15 to 20. Now it depends, because like I said, the heavier the bait, the more erratic, the faster you can work it while retaining depth. Countdown crankbaits. I think probably the easiest one to work with is the Countdown Booker depth rater, right? It's a foot a second, so you'd have to bomb that thing out there and you'd be waiting. But you can get some erratic jerk bait, twitch bait elements out of that, right? When I'm dealing, and I deal with clear water a lot, what becomes problematic is we need fast, we need deep, we need erratic. That's a great conundrum, because you've eliminated a ton of baits. Well, topwater's out of the question. Bucktails are generally out of the question. You take flash on top of it. We've really truncated that. Now, what you've done is some really good patterning. Now you're expanding upon what can be done. You know, you look at something like the H2O Tackle Barbarian, right? That has rattles in it. Do they make a non-rattle of that? You know, Jay?
Nothing I'm aware of.
But, you know, you look at a bait like that that has versatile weighting. That's what I'm going to be looking at. What baits are easily, like, what baits are built to have their weight augmented easily, right? So there, you can mod any bait, but a lot of times you're fooling with stuff so much, right, that you'll screw up the action. But like something like the Kraken Titan, all my stuff, it's meant the way the bait's constructed, it will handle the additional weighting. H2O is the same way. Some of these baits that you can just do screw in weights and get down there in the zone that you need to be. Something else I would recommend is, and this is the ninja trick, prepare yourself. Literally Carolina rigging crankbaits. What's a Carolina rig? That is a big old sinker in front of a leader, right? They do it with bath soft plastics. They'll put the weight in front of the thing, and basically you hop the weight and the bait comes along behind it. I've done this a bunch by using the 36-inch leaders, right? So I'll put a, you know, 1 ounce, 2 ounce egg sinker above the leader, and now I have a 36-inch leader with the egg sinker. So I am basically deep twitching crankbaits And as the egg sinker falls, guess what? The crankbait dives down. You rip it up, it rips up. You can twitch stuff. You can run any bait with 36 inches in front of the weight. You can actually take a crankbait. Like a, you could run a crane bait and bounce it off the bottom. And when it floats back up, it'll stand vertically. Rip, up, float. Rip, up, float. Right? So you're taking these shallow running crankbaits, Carolina rigging them and ripping them and bouncing them. They're not influenced by the weight on the bait itself. So it's not messing with the action. Now, every time you stop momentum, the thing's free falling down, right? But you can actually bang stuff off the bottom and just rip baits up and let that sinker fall back down. That bait's letting up. Boom, boom, bottom contact, floating bait, bottom contact, floating bait, right? That can be done with any buoyant crankbait. You can do that with a Suic. You can do it with a Titan. You can do it with a lot of stuff where, you know, if you imagine if you put, say, an unweighted Titan that's a really fast rise in front of a 1 ounce sinker, throw it out. It's going to sink like a stone, right? Every time you rip it up, that thing's going to bang to the bottom. And then when you pause it, it's going to suspend. Bang, suspend. Bang, suspend. So you're working the sinker and the bait's coming behind the sinker.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's a Carolina rig. And I've been doing that for eons. That works wonders. Do you want, wow, we got to downsize something real small, real deep. Don't put the weight on the bait. Put it way in front of the bait. All right. Now you've got suspension. Now you've got control of depth. Now you've got control speed. Pop it just a little bit and advance it just a little bit and it pauses. Rip, pause, rip, pause. My goodness, there's so many. Zach, any tips for night fishing? I'd love the thrill of catching a muskie in the dark. Getting ready for the drilling pump and seeing these beasts in the net. I'll tell you this. I think I talked to it earlier or mentioned it earlier, Jay, that there is an article coming out next week about some night fishing basics to get you dialed in. It's not that different than muskie fishing in the daylight, except for, I believe, a little bit of preparation and a few adjustments there. Jay, we've rambled on a bunch here. I got to get packing. I got to get cracking. Got to get packing here. Headed to Wisp by God Consin here shortly. Can you believe next week it'll be live from Jay's house?
It might be live from neighbor Steve's garage.
You never know.
No, you don't know. That would be, no.
It could get wild.
Anyway, the acoustics are terrible in there.
It's kind of boomy. Anyway, guys, be in Wisconsin next week. I'll give you guys the rundown of what's happening there.
Woo!
We're going to get dialed in. If we didn't get to you this week, we'll get to you next week. We've rambled on. I was going to try to be fast with it, Jay. Too many tangents. I apologize.
Only so much time in the day, Steve.
So much. Anyway, Jay Bird, say good night.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Later.
But if you don't own a Titan, you should.